What's up, dude?
Yo, Rob.
Sam Ogden in the house, at your house, or a house, and I'm at my house. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir. Very well.
Where are you right now? You're like a traveling man.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a rambling film carny for the past. Shit. Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah, you can curse.
Cool. Like 12 years now. But I keep coming back to Charleston. I moved here right after school. And then I've just kind of come back. I'm working on season 4 of the Netflix show Outer Banks down here.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. She's in South Carolina, not North Carolina.
It's not your first season on that show.
Yeah, I've been along for all 4.
Right. That's what I feel like I've been talking to you about that. That's so cool, dude, to be on the ride for a series like that for the whole way. Let's go. We're going to catch up to that because I want to talk about some different stuff you've worked on. I want to talk about some turtles you've built. I want to talk about some different stuff like that. But stock question for everybody. Where are you from, Sam?
I was born in Maryland, but I grew up in Cary, North Carolina.
What's the gap there? Like, how young do you move to North Carolina?
I went to kindergarten and first grade in Maryland.
So you've got vague memories at best.
Kind of never landish, sort of like, oh man, childhood happened there. And then I moved to North Carolina 2 weeks before Hurricane Fran in 1996.
Word. And
me as a 6 or 7 year old boy, when three trees fell on my house and I didn't have to go to school for a week, it was kind of like, oh man, I'm fucking Tom Sawyer.
Wait, so what year were you born?
1989.
Okay, so we're almost exactly the same age because I moved to Austin the same year, 96. And I'm from Dallas, but I'm not, you know what I mean? It's one of those things of a lot of people move their kids right at that before they really process a lot of memories age, which I think is smart. Did your parents move there for work? What was the shift?
Yeah, it's my dad's job.
What did he do?
Yeah, he's a civil engineer.
Okay. Did he design playgrounds or some shit? What did he do?
Playgrounds for kids can take shit.
Dude, that's exactly where my brain went. Pineapple Express, 100%.
Oh, man. Yeah, did we see that movie together at School of the Arts?
We might have. I know the first time I ever saw that movie was with Jared Thompson, and we went, it was the summer it came out after it had been at school and stuff. And we went for a run and we went with jogging clothes on and we're like, let's go see it. And we weren't stoned. Like, we didn't smoke any weed that day at all for whatever reason. And what we looked like complete stoners, we're all raggedy in gym clothes walking into the movie theater. And I'm like, there's no way if we got paid that we could convince anyone we're not high. We're just bought tickets to see this movie at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Anyway, tangent that involved a pickle. Yeah. But so what did your dad do civil engineer wise?
He's a project manager. And I guess at his company, he was a program manager. So a manager of project managers.
Very white collar.
Yeah, yeah. And both my parents are ex-Air Force. And
I didn't know that.
So they're just very organized. And
man,
so,
I wanted to be in the Air Force so bad. Did you want to be in the Air Force when you were a kid?
No, not really. It's kind of
they talk you out of
something.
It?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. My parents didn't want us to go into the military. But we are definitely kind of at the end of a line of a lot of military members of our family.
So you kind of broke the wheel on the whole joining the military thing.
Yeah, I went to film school. I went and joined the army. Yeah.
We have so much more in common than I thought. My granddad, military, my uncles, but me and my dad didn't do that. I always think that's a very interesting thing. That is one of the reasons why, for those listening, I don't care who thinks it's boring. I always start with where you're from and what do your parents do for a living and stuff, because I think it's fascinating whether or not people stick with that shit or whether they rebel against it or they do the opposite. Because a lot of the shows figuring out why the fuck you ended up at this school? How does that even happen? Where, so you're like a film nerd as a kid, or you TV nerd? What are your things you're super interested in when you're like in North Carolina and Cary? What's making like, young Sam excited?
I like to get outside and like just like go tromp around in the woods and find animals and stuff. I was a snake kid.
Okay.
Like
barefoot boy.
Had snakes. Yeah, man. Tom Sawyer, man. Like let's go see if we can make a raft out of logs. Like just cause like let's go and make a fort out of just like some branches we find and a bunch of trees and stuff.
Who's and in like, your crew? Just, is it siblings? Is it friends? Who's running around in the woods with you?
I was my little brother Malcolm. He's 2 years younger than me. And then we had like a few friends in the neighborhood, but like, you know, sometimes it would just be me and Mac. And like by our neighborhood, there was you know, this area of woods like about a mile deep between our neighborhood and the highway, where there was this, you know, in the springtime, there would be so many frogs. Well, like just ridiculous amounts of frogs everywhere.
Plague
like
the level.
It was something where like if we could have gone back there and like filmed a movie about, oh, frogs are taking it, you know, like never did. But like thinking back, like
that's totally where your production designer brain went. Right. You're like, you never get that many frogs in the same spot for free, shit. Dude.
Yeah, exactly. Darn it, we missed that chance. Like, the frogs are expensive.
Like, totally. The frog budget, like we were saying before we were recording, that's exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah.
It's out of control. So you and Mech are running around the woods, but what's the, this is very interesting to me because I've been talking to people recently who they tell me that they're very interested in getting paid to be involved in a specific genre of something. And then when we get to talking and come to find out, they don't spend a lot of time watching that genre. And I'm not judging that, whether that's bad or good, honestly, but people will be like, I want to be on a sitcom. And I'm like, what's your favorite sitcom? And then they're like, Will and Grace. And I'm like, what's your favorite sitcom that hasn't been off the air for 20 fucking years? Do you have a recent sitcom? Cause they're not going to put you on that. I don't know if you know, like, So when you're a kid, what are you watching things that you're hoping to make, or are you trying to make your own stuff that looks like stuff you're seeing? Like, what's inspiring you?
I think like it kind of started out with, we watched movies growing up. Like, we'd go to the movies as a family, you know, just like that sort of thing. Like, see, like, you know, big budget blockbuster stuff and
like, what did you see as a family? What were you allowed to see with you and Mac and the mom and dad?
I just remember, like, one time, okay, yeah, like, in terms of movies, we watched a lot of movies growing up. One time I was, like, homesick from school.
Word.
And I'm talking about, like, I want to say it was, like, 10 or 11.
Okay.
And my mom took me to see James Cameron's Titanic in the theater.
In the middle of the day.
On a school day, in the middle of the day. We were like the only people in theater. Yeah, and then just like, as a 10-year-old, I was just like, but wait a minute, that door is so big. Why can't Jack get up? Like, as a 10-year-old, and it's still a thing.
Yeah. You clocked somebody, that meme.
Yeah. Hope just like, yeah, years ahead of time. I was ahead of my time.
That's a weird ass movie to watch with your mom.
Yeah, right?
It's very romantic. And not in a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah.
that's some slow romance on a sinking ship to watch with your mom.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There are boobs in that movie on the screen.
There are boobs in that movie.
Was that a thing when you were a kid? What was censorship like? That's very interesting to me. Like, my parents let me watch fucked up stuff when I was really young.
Oh, dude. Okay, it was in high school. I still remember the way my dad said it on the phone when I told him, yo, Dad, we just watched Clockwork Orange. Oh, my God, you watched Clockwork Orange. It's like, it's just like, my
He was hoping
dad,
you'd never see it.
Yeah, my good dad to him is just like, done. But like, you know, we would watch, like, I remember when we watched, like, Desperado. To this day, is still one of the more memorable sex scenes that I've ever seen in a movie.
Fair,
yeah.
With Salma Hayek and Antonio Banderas.
saw that at a very just formative age, and just like that was one where like we're watching that as a family. Dad had forgotten that that was in there, and then like tried to sort of cover eyes and just like, ah, shit, it happened.
Do you know what the first? Because there were a few scenes when I was a kid that were it that were like, oh no, some boobs would pop out, or like, yeah, Titanic, something like that, where it's kind of done in a graceful way. The first scene that I ever encountered with my parents that made me very uncomfortable. Like, I already knew what was going on. I was a very mature kid, but I was like, we're going to watch this. And I didn't know it was coming. And my dad forgot that it was in the movie. Like you said, fucking Jerry Maguire in the beginning.
I don't remember the scene.
This movie is mostly kind of a family rom-com. There's some swearing in it. And so if you're cool with your kids of like double digits, low double digits, hearing some swear words, it's fine. There's a few, it's, you know, I think Cameron Crowe, whatever. But the beginning of the movie, out of nowhere, there's a cute scene where he gets off a plane and he runs into Renee Zellweger by baggage claim. And they're with the kid. And it's this super cute rom-com family scene. And it's made clear that they're setting up this couple for the rest of the movie. But currently, Tom Cruise is engaged to Kelly Preston. And Renee Zellweger is like talking to her little child, who's like 3, Jonathan Libnicki. And she's like, whoever's with him must be some classy babe. And it cuts to Tom Cruise and Kelly Preston just banging, my dude, against like a bookshelf, like they're gonna knock it down, and she screams like, "Don't stop fucking me!" Like, it's graphic, and it is surprising. And I remember being like, "Oh my god,
nineties era sexuality in movies is,"
and then it's instantly over. It's over very fast. And they have a weird conversation about having a threesome. And then we move on and it's kind of a football movie. And my dad is just like locked onto the screen. Like, let's not acknowledge. I kind of fucked up here. Everybody look. And what you wait for this moment to be over. Cuba Gooding Jr. is going to be here. He's going to save us. Fuck. Those are crazy moments. Those ones where you're like, you don't realize that you're seeing something that's brand new. Is there anything else from your childhood that you remember that kind of hit you that way? Just hit you like, oh, this is a new experience that I'm seeing.
Oh, man. Well, like, we're on the subject of just like things that you see in movies that are surprising when you see them at a certain age. Fucking Saving Private Ryan when the dude gets stabbed in the chest is still to this day just like, just something that like I saw and has stuck with me, and just like, yeah, in terms of like,
how old were you when you saw it?
I think that was like similar to like the Titanic age, like just like, oh man, like I'm mature for 11, sure, I can watch PG-13, you know, I can even watch R sometimes, but just like, yeah, that one really hurt. Like,
that was on, dude. Yeah, that movie, that in the beginning, especially the beach scene at the very beginning, was on a very short list of stuff that my dad was like, no. And it was great because he was so liberal with what he let me watch. When he said no, I was like, okay. I didn't even want to see it. I was like, I trusted him. I was like, I must be fucked up. I don't want to see.
It's really felt horrific, like a beheading
video. I was like, I'm good. Whatever it is. I don't need
I don't need that in my life. Good for you. Good for you, dude.
Like, yeah, there was a few of those. Pulp Fiction, when Bruce Willis rescues Ving Rhames from the back of the...
Yeah,
my dad was like, you have to leave. And I was like, why? And he was like, you need to trust me. And I was like, okay. The rest of the movie is like, oh, hey, bang, bang, the bullets didn't hit us.
Yeah.
Oh, this guy didn't have a boxing match.
This stuff.
Oh shit, dude. That is great. This guy's got Samuel L. Jackson's fucking wallet from Pulp Fiction, is what he just held up for those listening.
Well, yeah. So it's Pulp Fiction is a movie about redemption.
That's
and
right.
So Samuel L. Jackson was a bad motherfucker, but then was redeemed and walked the earth a redeemed man.
Is that you? Do you carry? Is that your real wallet?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had this for years. It's falling apart. Yeah, that's my real wallet. Yeah.
All right. So let's go back to Sam Town. How do you end up at School of the Arts? Why did you go there?
Oh, man.
I don't ask everybody that, but I'm like curious why. I mean, you're in Cary, so you got a good deal.
Well, it was between SCAD and School of the Arts. And I had gotten like enough of a scholarship offer from SCAD that it was basically going to be the same price as School of the Arts. So it kind of came down to this sort of decision of like, do I want to go all in and go to film school, or do I want to kind of like keep my options open and maybe kind of like window shop and browse a little bit at a school with like a little bit more broader program? And I went to Savannah's like summer seminar thing and did like, it was like a month or two or something over the summer, and just like got to, you know, experience what it was like there. It's kind of my first like college-ish sort of thing. But then, yeah, I kind of decided like, okay, I'm going to go join the art army. Like I'm going to go to film school and just went out all in on School of the Arts. And part of it had to do with in my interview, I, was sitting around in sort of like the holding room with a bunch of upperclassmen, a bunch of like fourth year students. And I had brought my art portfolio with me and didn't really know like if it was really going to make a difference or, you know, like just like everyone were doing like writing samples and stuff. And so I brought it, and then the upperclassmen started talking to me. They're like, oh man, you should go in the art department. And at the time, like I kind of thought that if I was going to film school, it was going to mean that like I was going to need to dive into more the narrative aspect of it and like write stuff and direct stuff and shoot stuff. And I was really interested in that. I didn't do a lot of that in high school. But I also was really into art and making art. And so when they told me about art department, they were like, yeah, you know, like everything that's not an actor, like all of it, like, you know, all that stuff. I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, that all makes sense to me. And it was just like, oh, well, yeah, that's what I should be doing. Like, duh. So like, and so it just made sense that way. And like, but it's just the weirdest thing now. It's like I work on this program SketchUp that I've never had a class on that first came out while I was at school, like the first free version that just like, you can download it and just model stuff. And I used that to model and build a half pipe while I was at school. And that was like my first ever like project. It's like skateboarding is really what got me into film. It's like, I got my first video camera because we wanted to like just film our friends and us skateboarding. And then it was like, oh, okay, well, let's like try to shoot some stuff and cut stuff together, you know? And then I was like, okay, like everybody discovered girls and forgot about skateboarding. And then it was like, oh, we can still make movies. Like, and then let's like, it's like, I don't make movies anymore. Like merely myself, I don't like make my own movies, but like, but yeah, now like art department, I work on that same software that I used to draw that half pipe in college, like every day, like drawing sets for Outer Banks. And it's
let me ask you this to kind of do a little time jump here. So sure. I've recently come up with this as maybe a new stock question, but when you enter film school, you have a certain expectation, right? You're about to spend somebody's money, yours or somebody else's, on going to this place to get this education, have the social experience, do all this shit. And you're hoping that when you leave, XYZ happens. Sam Ogden thoughts, fill in the gap. Then later, you graduate and you have a similar idea, except instead now you're replacing the tenses of these. And it's with all the stuff that I learned. I spent all this money. I owe this money, whatever. I am going to go now do XYZ Sam Ogden thoughts. What are the differences between those two thoughts? How did things change in your expectation on what was going to happen next?
Well, I guess, like, you know, first year when everybody gets to school, like, everybody kind of has their idea for a movie that they, like, want to make. You know, like, everybody goes to film school. Oh, yeah, but not necessarily. I didn't have, like, a feature in mind, like, some, like, oh, man, I'll make this someday. But just kind of aspirations of sort of, like, being a writer-director sort of person. And I feel like a lot of people kind of go through the reality check of really what that means while you're in school, in terms of like digging into one aspect of it much deeper and seeing like the depth of every single aspect and how one can fit a lot better than another. And that's not always being the director, you know, right. But then with every film that there is, there's only one director and there's hundreds of other positions that are also there and also like can be cool things to do. And like, you know, just weird and different. And
I wish so we had like, more of that conversation in the drama school. And I don't know how much of that conversation you were really having in the film school while you were in it, but I wish more of that conversation was happening. Shit, all the way back to when I was in high school, dude. Like, there's all sorts of weird ass cool jobs out there that aren't maybe the thing you're thinking about. You can keep studying the thing that you're studying, like directing, writing, in this in a big umbrella kind of thing. But I just now in my mid-30s think I figured out, like, I think I'm a punch-up guy. I think that's what I do if I'm utilizing all of my best strengths and pushing that as hard as I can. And no one has ever suggested that I look into what that means or how to do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think that's good that that's where your mindset is. Where did you pick that up? Well, like the notion that those are out there. Did you know? Did someone tell you or did you have to go find it?
Well, that's the thing. It's like I was told basically in my interview about kind of art department.
Right.
And then just kind of like really, really kind of cluing into what the other different jobs that have nothing to do with the camera are. And you are still involved with movies. Like there are people that build sets that are basically carpenters that work on movies, like that are working on the same movies that you're working on.
Exclusively, yeah.
Right. And like being a set dresser on a movie, like, you know, you could spend like days, like gently placing trinkets on a shelf, like, you know, that's going to be a hero piece, you know, and that's your job. Like, and so just like, but then also there's also different, very, you know, big differences in hours, like whether or not you're going to be like an on-set person where like your days are going to be like 12, 14, 16 hour days, like, and just like in terms of how that will affect your quality of life and like, how there'll be just periods of, you know, weeks or months of your life where just like, you're not going to see anyone, you don't have time. Like,
right.
But then like, there are also other positions where there is a little more spaciousness. So it's just like, but then at the same time, it's like, I don't know, if you really like doing something and you're good at it and you can find a way for a movie to pay you, they're probably going to pay you more than you could make anywhere else to do that thing. But you'll have to do it a lot, like right. 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. And that's your freaking life. Like,
yeah.
And so it's just, you know, I don't know, something that the big shift for me was kind of going from like, okay, like in terms of being like, being the director, like, cool, like that's one thing, but in terms of catering to the skills that I like in terms of art and like creating and like making the cool looking stuff, like, and designing it is like, I guess just that ended up being just like, it's the sort of fit where it's like, just, it doesn't feel like I'm trying. Like it's just like, just kind of follow, like, you know, just following ideas, just kind of following creative bliss, like, in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, it's high stress, you know, it's like high stakes, Like, but just because you're stressed out about something doesn't mean you make better art. Like,
I agree with that. And I think that can be a like weird misconception. I think it's how people work is really specific. Like, I feel like I create the best stuff under some pressure, but not too much. If you're like, if you're over my shoulder screaming at me, tell me what to do, it's going to be too much. Some people, I think very, very few might be like somehow motivated by that.
Yeah,
but
give
not
it to me.
Yeah. Right? Some kind of kind of a sadism, masochism kind of thing going on. But for me personally, I do way better work the night before it's due than I'll ever do 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah, no, that's like basically the pace that I have to work at is constant night before it's due pace. Like constant, like it was due yesterday and the teacher is like making an exception and letting you turn it in late, but it better be in. Like it's kind of that sort of like pace. But like, I don't know, it's like it becomes just a sort of like flow state. And I don't know, that's kind of what I was getting around to saying about the shift in mindset in college was really like, okay, I'm going to like develop skills and just like being very focused on like, okay, how am I going to develop skills that so that I am like as useful to this process as possible? And like that kind of came in the form of like, I now like I learned how to 3D model and learned how to draft and learned how to illustrate and draw and like all basically not just necessarily for my own ideas, just like I'm a hired gun. I'm like an art assassin. So just like, I have all these skills and I'll just come and any problem you set me on, I'll just, here's the laser. Ew, like,
right.
And then it's done. Like, cool. What's next? Like,
how do you do when you don't have work?
I build turtles.
What does that mean?
So like in 2015, I went to Burning Man for the first time.
Word.
And that was after like my uncle had been trying to get me to go for like 4 years, like since in college, but I was in college. I was like, I couldn't like too much, like just, I don't have the time. It's like, I can't, no, like I need to have a life to wreck before I go wreck it. Like
it's also at the end of summer, not like in the middle. And so if August, you're to go, it's going to run right into the school year, man.
Yeah.
No time.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just like, no. And then I was finally out of college a couple of years out and I'd like had jobs. I like had my feet under me. I was like, okay, he asked me to go and I went and I saw this like sandbox of people like, you know, play designing and making crazy art that like I'd been saying no to for years. I was just like kicking myself about it. So I overdid it and built this really big car called art car called Headspace the year after that with my friend Mark Hagenbart. Art car. Or
what is an art car?
So at Burning Man, there's like, you know, art installations and then there's art cars or mutant vehicles. And those are basically, it can, the difference between an art car and a mutant vehicle is an art car is a street legal car that has been made into a work of art and is still street legal. A mutant vehicle is a just whatever the hell vehicle made to look like whatever the hell. So there's like, you know, giant three-masted sailing ships that have been built on semi-trucks that drive around and you can't see any of the wheels. Like they just, it looks like a giant sailing ship floating around. And since 2017, I have been working on Simon the Turtle car, which is my my blessing and curse to myself. And it's a giant 10-foot diameter turtle shell, remote-controlled electric turtle. And
you said so remote it's, control?
Yeah.
It's like it's a giant RC controller. Turtle.
Yeah.
But it's like car sized. How tall is it? Like get relatively for anyone listening, like it's as tall as what?
I would say like the top of its head is about 12 feet off the ground. And there's like, you know, there's a 10-foot diameter turtle shell. And then we have rainbow monkey bars that go up above that. And then a crow's nest up here that you can stand in and ride around it while we're driving around up there. But yeah,
where do you keep this when you're not in the desert? And then when you get to the desert, what the fuck do you do with this thing all day? You're the captain of this thing and you're like, yo, ladies, gentlemen, get in my turtle. Let me take you for a ride.
Yeah, I'm the captain of the turtle car. Yeah.
Does it just become a like a nonstop turtle shell orgy in the back? We're talking about Burning Man here. What are the rules in the turtle?
I mean, it hasn't yet. Or at least not at Burning Man. but it's a little dusty out there, you know. It's basically kind of a like I'm pretty much just like a free Uber. Like it's a little more fun, a little more personal than that. But the whole point of having a car out there is to give strangers rides, and so just kind of like riding around and like if someone like you know waves at you, just like stop and like watch the way they light up. That like, oh my god, this car just stopped for me, and then hop in the back.
You know what it reminds me of? You know, like on, you know, on drugs blown up kind of way is when you go to New York in the winter, especially in December when it's all Christmased out and shit. And there's all those guys on the little rickshaw bikes and they have lights and it's like, who has the coolest looking one to get into?
Oh, yeah.
And they're all playing fucking Last Christmas on a Bluetooth speaker. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're like, no, well, no, like, no, fuck you. Like hitting each other with the legs. Like, I got you. I got you. Get in the back of mine. You're that guy, but at Burning Man and it's a turtle.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah. This year we're putting sound on it for the first time, like big sound.
Oh,
we're going to have we're going to have a DJ. So like we're basically removing the back quadrant of the shell and it's going to be open like an El Camino. And a DJ will stand in the back and DJ out the back of the thing while we're driving around.
That is pretty cool. But that's only, what is that, 10 days? How long is that?
Yeah, ish.
10 days a year. So you're spending all of your time that you're not in the desert is then spent on working on the turtle for next year and building art sets for TV shows.
Pretty much.
Is there any extra space in there? Do you do anything else with your time, my friend?
Well, yeah, there's other events other than just Burning Man.
You take the turtle car to other shit?
Oh, yeah. We took it to, there was a Burning Man regional this year in Miami, Florida called Love Burn. It's every year, but we went
regional? That sounds like a qualifier, like cheerleading?
Yeah, exactly.
What does that mean?
There's that thing in the desert is like Burning Man in Black Rock City, Nevada. That's right. the big Burning Man. But then there are regional Burning Man events around the country. So each
be
state
stupid
has
for them
one.
Not to. That makes sense.
Like Texas has one called Freezer Burn. It's called Saguaro Man in Arizona. And then Charleston actually had their third. It's called Emergence Burn. And then it's called Alchemy in Atlanta, Synergy in
Emergence
in
Burn
Vegas.
Sounds like something that you put on a second degree burn on your arm.
I used Emergence Burn.
Yeah. I've had Emergence Burn. cool, man, but that gives you a good chance. How fast does this thing go? I mean, are you taking it on the highway or do you have to like ship this thing places? How does this work?
I have a 20-foot long flatbed trailer that we trailer it on. Yeah. But at Elements Fest, we got to drive the thing on a NASCAR track.
That's cool.
A video as a promo for Elements Fest as an art car race where we raced against the Scrubby Bubbles car, this car that they made for Elements Fest called the Dakota Pagoda. It's really hard to say. And then like a couple of others. And yeah, they got us out on the NASCAR track, and my car can spin in place because it's basically just two joysticks and two motors. And then the front wheels and back wheels are caster wheels. So it's just like a skid steer.
Yeah.
And so I pitched the idea to them. I was like, yo, you should have somebody throw a banana peel in front of my wheel and I'll spin out.
Mario Kart style.
And we freaking did it. Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, it would be a really dope ass show. I mean, is that a show already? Am I just behind
the
times?
Art Car Garage?
Well, not something? Even just the garage. I mean, that would be the package that plays before. But no, I think you treat it like fucking American Ninja Warrior or BattleBots, where you race them. And you treat it like Wacky Races. Remember
It'd
Wacky
be so
Races?
So dangerous. Yeah, my thing is designed to go 5 miles an hour.
But that's the best part is you put them in the same speed classes.
Yeah.
And so each act of the show, you get a different speed class. By the end, you go to the fast ones that maybe shouldn't even be racing each other.
Jesus.
But dude, the turtle might even be like the pace car for the whole, you know, that's like a fun, ooh, I've spun out. Like they're doing comedy.
Oh, totally. But that would just have a bunch of clowns in the back.
Dude, that would be a cool ass show to watch. You watch a little package where you watch them build each one. And then they race each other in their weird ass clown cars.
Oh, totally.
I'm here for it, man. All right. Anyone listening, what is today? June 7th. That's me. So fuck you. Don't take my stuff. we've been in this business long enough to know you got to say that shit out loud. Man, that sounds like a fucking good time, honestly. You've got all of these different turtle car things. You're doing the fourth season of the show of Outer Banks. That's awesome. What do you work on? I don't normally ask this of anybody, but haven't talked to you in so long. So this is more me asking my friend. Dude, what the fuck have you what else have you worked on? You got anything cool recent stories?
Well, real quick, do you want to talk about the last time we saw each other? I guess maybe we saw each other in between, but the last time we saw each other
was it when you were staying at my place?
Yeah.
What
that
happened?
That was awesome. Huh?
Oh, it was great. I thought you were going to be like, no. I got to drop shit on you.
Oh, no. I mean, I've been through two relationships since then.
Word.
Yeah.
When was that? You came in 2018? It was pre-pandemic, 2019 maybe?
Yeah. And it was pre-pandemic. I think it was 2018.
Okay. No, that was a blast.
Yeah, man. No, it was good. Thanks again for having me.
Man, it's interesting, right? Because I have a very interesting relationship with social dynamics. I don't like group settings. One of the reasons a lot of artists don't. even if
but
they're...
But I go to Burns, though. I still go to things, but it's stressful. Same. But I want to tough it out and be there.
Because you also hope it sets up opportunities for you to have one-on-one interactions, which you're more comfortable with, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, me too, man. 100%.
That's why I gravitated towards weed. Yeah.
Yes. 100%. It is such
the thing that a group was doing in a small group in a room that was quiet with maybe some jazz music playing or something.
It's always the crowd, man. It's always the crowd. And they're also, it's hard for people to get super aggro in the back room, in the smoke room. It's usually not that kind of space.
No.
I think that that's definitely one of the things that we connected on early. And I also think it's something that you can often tell about people when you meet them pretty quickly. If they're on the train, because it is a vibe with people who feel like I just recently started drinking, and I didn't drink through my whole 20s. I started drinking my early 30s, and it's not saying I never had a drink, but I never made a habit of it ever. I would have two beers at an event, and then I wouldn't drink again for months. But now I am drinking more often. And I can just feel the energy of the people who drink first. That's their go-to thing. And you have the opposite vibe of that. Do you drink at all?
Not like, not really. Like, I don't like not drink in that, like, I won't have a drink.
Right.
But I just, like, I don't tend to gravitate towards it.
Right. If a bunch of, like friends from set were like, we're all going to go to this bar and drink a bunch of beers together. And that's like a thing we do. Do you want to join us drinking a bunch of beers? You're going to go and have one beer while they get wasted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Got it. And then you're going to sneak off and hit the pipe in your jacket.
Yeah. Or maybe I might try to convince some of them to maybe like come smoke weed with me instead of having another shot, like, or something like that. Of course,
because you're a sweetheart.
It's like, hey, y'all, this might be better.
I rolled up this whole thing for us to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely the approach. So let's go back to the question, though. So last time I saw you, 2018-ish, whenever that was. How was the pandemic for you as far as work goes? Because, I mean, I got lucky in fall 2020. I got to go into like a fucking back to work, excuse me, situation, but not...
Yeah.
But I wasn't out of luck. Did it kill your shit for a long time or?
Oh man, it was so, so crazy. So I had started working on season 11 of The Walking Dead. Literally like the Monday that all of the shows in the country were starting to shut down.
Like March.
March. And so all the shows are shutting down. We're setting up our office as if like we're going to keep going. It's just like, we're like watching the news. It's just like, this is insane. But like, okay, I'm going to go measure the back lot and start making a model.
That's what you do.
Oh my God.
That's what you do.
But then, like during that time, I got a call from, I want to say it was like freaking like Vanity Fair or something, because it was discovered that someone on the show that I had been on in Chicago, the UPM, had gotten COVID or something. And like, they had gotten a copy of the crew list and were like calling everyone, like not contact tracing, but like reporters were calling everyone and just like asking them about it. And so I'm like, I'm on the set of The Walking Dead, setting up an office on a show that seems doomed to shut down. And on Friday the 13th, we shut down. And what that meant is that like the guys, like my bosses that had gotten leases on apartments there to work for the entire season, sheltered in place in their apartments in Sonoya, Georgia, away from their families in LA, like alone, just there, and worked. I had been Airbnb for that week. It had no lease whatsoever. So I drove the fuck home to Chicago. And then we worked for like 6 to 8 weeks, like basically directly with the show creator, designing the entire back lot that was the Commonwealth in season 11. And so that was like, that's the biggest thing that I ever designed. Like just to date. Like
under the weirdest circumstances.
Just from home in Chicago while no one else is working. And just like, right. Oh God, like this just happened to be okay. Like,
right.
And then right at the end of that, Outer Banks started.
That's so ironic. The Walking Dead of all things.
The Walking Dead, man.
You're like, I'm stuck global at pandemic home shuts while us down. A global pandemic. And I'm like, but we have to tell a story about a fake time this happened.
Yeah, exactly. Where like it resulted in people having to, you know, live in compounds where they still struggle with a class system where the haves have and the have nots don't.
I like the idea that you were like, well, if things really go to shit, at least I literally have a plan. I'm holding it. So we'll try this, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
but this, at this some seems point, like when everyone's okay. a zombie, people are going to turn to me and they're going to be like, "Sam, you're like a zombie guy, right? And you work on a zombie show. Do you have any ideas for the community?" You're like, "Actually,
yeah, totally. I have full color renderings here of different ways that we can use the train station as a community center or a courtroom, or we could put in a basketball hoop, or you have a field hospital, or it's amazing what you can use different spaces for.
We may have to cut the drama school section. I don't know if they need to be mirroring each other and making out. Yeah. Dude, I'm going to have to let you go, but I really, really am so glad I got to catch up with you. And thank you for doing this, my dude.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
If you had, this is going to be like final thoughts. If you were to give 22-year-old Sam a piece of advice, what would it be?
Got this, dude.
I imagine he would say...
Oh, wait. Chris.
What if it all works out? Question mark. Those are some limp petals on those flowers. But yeah, what if it all works out?
You ever think about that?
Did you ever think about that?
Or were you too busy just thinking about all the worst case scenarios and just trying to prepare for them?
Right.
What if it all works out? What are you going to do there?